Judge Reyes, Judge Sleater, Judge Gaitas, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. Can you hear me okay? I just want to make sure. Okay. Just want to make sure that the volume is up there. We have six cases on our calendar for today. Five are set for oral argument, four of which are in person, one via Zoom. The first case on our calendar today is A22-0812, and is it pronounced Reed or Rude?
Rude,
okay, thank you. Rude v. Rude. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. When you approach the podium, you can use one of two podiums. There are two right next to you, or you can use the middle one. The advantage of the middle one is that there's a button that can lower and raise, and then you also have the timer on there. So you can make sure to keep track of how much time you have for the arguments themselves. When you go up to the podium, please state your name for the record, the party you're representing, and if you have any preferred ways to be referred to either for yourselves or the parties. And during the argument, you may have questions either for myself or my two colleagues, Judge Sleater and Judge Gaitas here. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may approach the podium and begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's a pleasure to be here, by the way. It's been a while.
It is good to be back in person.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Vetter. I represent the appellant, Joseph Rude. I will refer to him as either father or appellant during oral argument here today. Father respectfully requests that this court reverse the district court's findings and conclusions that are not supported by the record evidence and remand the case back to the district court for determination based on the evidence in the record. Your Honors, a couple of things here with respect to appellant's argument. You know, Father's first position is with respect to the report from his expert, Dr. Klein. The district court determined that it was irrelevant to the proceeding. Now, relevancy is any fact that has a tendency to make something more probative or not. Here, the district court determined that there were two issues that had brought these parties back before them. One of them were the dietary issues of the child. So, if there are one of two issues that brought the parties before the court.
Well, counsel, was that issue properly before the district court? Wasn't that already decided by this court in terms of and you're talking specifically of the two allergies?
Yeah, I'm talking, Your Honor, with respect to the allergy issue. And I would say it's more than that. It's allergies, it's intolerances, it's sensitivities. I would say, no. Has that issue been addressed by this court? Yes. This court issued an appellate decision on that issue. Interestingly, if you look at that appellate decision, it addressed two records that were in there, one from Dr. Schreckenstein and another one from New Kingdom Healthcare. There was a significantly larger amount of evidence that was presented on that very issue, and this court determined that there had been no recommendations regarding this child consuming these things.
Mr. Vetter, I want to get back to Judge Reyes' question and your answer to it. You say the issue is allergy, and I thought I heard you say in response to that that, yes, it's been decided. Wouldn't it be more appropriately framed that the issue was whether your client's parenting time should be supervised? And the reason for it was his continued insistence, despite at least three different rulings. I'm talking about the OFP ruling as well as this court ruling that's affirmed the ruling in the underlying custody decision, his insistence to keep pushing an issue that's been resolved, and that was part of the reason for the ex parte motion and the reason for the ultimate reason for supervised visitation. So the issue of supervised visitation, what error the court made by therefore ruling that an expert's opinion as to whether he needs further testing for allergies would be relevant to the issue of supervised parenting time.
Sure, Your Honor, and I do think you are right. I mean, the ultimate issue is supervised parenting time and how the district court got there. And one of the two ways the district court got there was father's belief with respect to the allergy intolerance sensitivity issue, which was a key issue that the district court was looking at that time. And there were multiple records that, frankly, are contrary to what the district court found and is found on multiple occasions.
But again, what I'm getting to, the issue here is not the allergy because that's been resolved. So wasn't that the basis of the district court's decision to exclude that piece of evidence?
Well, that I don't agree with, Your Honor, because I don't think that issue is fully resolved here. And I understand where you're saying, look, there have been decisions on that. I don't think there's been a decision that has looked at the full evidence of it. And then when the district court makes a determination that father and his parents are the only people who see this issue, that's just not true. We know that from the multiple medical records that are in the file. We know that from the multiple professionals that are in the file. And that was one of the bases that the court then used.
But subject to perhaps a PFR upstairs, it seems like that issue has been resolved. And I understand your client has an appeal of the OFP, which also had a similar ruling. So that perhaps isn't done until that decision is made. But I noticed in your client's cross-examination answers that about hasn't this been decided? He said, yes, but it's on appeal. And so, yes, it's been on appeal. Isn't the point of all that is he disagrees with the decisions? I appreciate that, but it's still resolved.
Your Honor, I guess I don't agree with the statement that it's been resolved. And the reason I don't agree with that is the way the district court has framed this in its most recent order isn't consistent with the record evidence. And if an issue is resolved, I think it has to be resolved consistent with the record evidence. And it's not here.
But that sounds like you're trying to rehear or ask for reconsideration of our prior decision on that issue. We have resolved that issue. And if a PFR is filed, you know, that's great, but we have case law that says once our decision is final, we are bound by that decision. So we can't revisit it, and parties can't revisit that issue. That seems to be the law of the case. And we also have Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure, of Civil Appellate Procedure 140.01, that says we don't grant rehearings, that we just don't do that at all. So that seems to be an issue that has been resolved.
I would say, Your Honor, no, and we're not asking one for reconsideration of that issue. But we're not. That's completely different and distinct. The district court here in this hearing took evidence from a layperson, the supervisor.
But this court, the district court did acknowledge our prior decision as well on the issue of whether the issue of allergies to gluten and dairy.
Your Honor, the district court took evidence on the child's allergies post-argument on that issue from a layperson, the supervisor, Chris Davis. So the district court was looking at evidence even past this court's decision or the time or the evidence that this court would have had in front of it. So I would say the issue was not resolved because the district court was still looking at the issue. And the question becomes then,
well, what issue was the district court looking at? I think that's what we need to be clear on that as well.
Sure. I think it was one of two things. It was, you know, whether effectively father's beliefs about the allergy issue are reasonable and whether they are endangering to the child. That was one. And if father's got medical records that show that this is an issue and that there have been recommendations that the child avoid dairy, which there have been, I know this court previously found there weren't. There are. We've cited.
So the second issue, I don't think is already, I think the second issue identified has already been resolved.
Your Honor, the piece I struggle with that is, can a court resolve something that's completely contrary to the evidence? And I don't think this court, any of these three members, are denying that there is a recommendation that child.
But that's already been litigated. This court has already decided that the district court's decision, including its findings of facts, were supported by the record. So we can't go back to relitigate that issue?
Well, and Your Honor, and I'm not, again, asking this court to relitigate that issue. What I'm asking this court to look at is what's happened since that time with the district court in January of this year. And what the district court did in January of this year was reopen that issue by making additional findings on allergies, taking testimony from witnesses on that topic.
But can you help me understand how the testimony of this expert would have been really relevant to the issue of endangerment? I mean, I heard your response to one of the other earlier questions about, you know, establishing the reasonableness of father's belief, but maybe you could explain that a little better, because I don't think I'm totally getting that.
Sure, Your Honor. To the extent that the claim is that father's beliefs about the child's dietary issues are endangering the child, I don't think you can get there if there's actual medical documents and evidence that supports his position on it. If this was some issue where father was completely out in left field on it.
But I guess how would the testimony of this particular expert have supported the reasonableness of father's belief?
Oh, sure. This expert had reviewed all of the medical evidence that the child's records that he'd had and opined, you know, to a medical degree of certainty, which you don't hear very often, that the child needed to have further evaluation consistent with what father was requesting and consistent with what the court has faulted father for, and consistent with what the court determined was part of what was endangering the child.
But this expert never examined the child or really did anything beyond looking at medical records. Is that right?
Well, I think that would go to the weight you might give the expert, but whether or not it's relevant, oftentimes we have experts that review things but don't actually meet with a professional, for instance, in a custody eval. I might have an expert review who never actually meets with anybody but actually reviews the records and may render an opinion on that. So whether or not they've actually seen the child, he's reviewed the medical records and made a determination or a recommendation based on that. So I think if it goes to the reasonableness of father's belief and whether that's endangering a child, to have an opinion that's consistent with the medical records and the recommendations that are in the record, that can't be endangerment. I don't see how a parent in Minnesota can endanger their child by saying, I want my child's medical recommendations to be followed. That can't be endangerment. In fact, I think it would be more endangering to a child if we said we're going to completely ignore a child's medical records and recommendations.
With all due respect, it seems like your argument is circular, because you're still trying to get back to reopen the issue of whether or not the district court's previous findings of fact were supported by the record. And I want to ask the question in terms of the testimony. Whether the testimony should have been admitted, isn't the time frame really what father thought before the OFP had been granted?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor, and I think the district court's own order doesn't agree with that. If that were the case, then why take testimony from this lay witness, the supervisor, Chris Davis, about it, and then make a finding about it, which was all post ex parte order? All of that was post ex parte order. This was testimony that mother elicited, by the way, not father. You know, to the extent she's opened the door to that, and then the district court grabbed on that and made a finding on it and relied on that finding to say, I'm going to restrict your parenting time based on testimony from a lay witness, but I'm not going to admit testimony from an actual medical doctor who's been doing allergy since 1976.
Mr. Vetter, I'm still not sure I make the connection that you're arguing, and that is, when you say open the door, I can't see that in the order. The door you're talking about is whether he has an allergy, and I'm looking at finding 12 of the court's order. The court has already made specific findings that Wyatt is not allergic to wheat or dairy, and then refers to findings of fact from its April 16, 2021 order. As I read that, and as I read the references to it, is simply, and the testimony was to show that your client has not accepted that ruling and therefore continues to push the issue, which leads to the endangerment. Now, right. How am I reading the record wrong?
No, you know, I think you're actually reading the record right on that. But the endangerment can't be that a parent's belief about his child's health issues are based on medical records.
But why can't it if those same medical records were before the court previously and said he doesn't have an allergy and your client simply doesn't accept that?
I wouldn't know how you wouldn't accept the medical records. If I go to a doctor...
What I'm getting at, though, is that he has to accept the judge has reviewed those records and listened to the testimony and concluded he does not have it based on the same evidence of negative results of various evaluations of different medical personnel. And so I'm still not understanding, once that's been decided by a court and affirmed by our court, that's the issue of the endangerment, is it not? Your client just refuses to accept that.
I don't agree with that characterization of it, Your Honor.
And how so, or why?
You know, to me, the endangerment that the district court was determining was father's belief about the child's medical
issues. Well, let me shift gears then a little bit. Wouldn't that be the same regarding sex abuse allegations? In other words, there's been four different, as I understand it, child protection over the years investigations, all with the same conclusion that there's no evidence of it, and the court's finding that there is none. I suspect your client may still believe that there is, but wouldn't you agree to keep pursuing that despite all these findings that it doesn't happen? He might disagree with that, but he has to follow that. Otherwise, it would be abuse to continue, according to these experts, to require interviews of this of their son about sex abuse that they found doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I would say, Your Honor, with respect to the prior findings on sex abuse, yes, but we were talking about sex abuse even after that. So, you know, there are two different time periods here. You're talking, I think, primarily from prior to 2018. That's when all the prior sex abuse things came up. The one that brought these parties back before the court were from allegations that happened in 2021.
But I understand they were found not to have been shown to occur, right?
Well,
and the court made that finding, and I believe the court in the OFP, which was incorporated in this order, made the same finding.
In the court in the OFP, and I say I've got 5 seconds left, but if you look at the court in the OFP proceeding, Your Honor, it mischaracterized the child's testimony, saying he was touching his leg. I say I'm out of time. Can I?
You may conclude briefly.
Right. When in fact, if you look at the testimony from the child was testifying to his penis and his butt explicitly. So to the extent that the district court judge in the order for protection proceeding got that wrong, which is also on appeal, that's erroneous. So I appreciate your time, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Counsel, for responding, you will have 15 minutes for your arguments. Please state your name for the record, any preferred titles or references you'd like for yourself or your client, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you very much for allowing me to present today on behalf of my client, the respondent, Katrina M. Rood. As you heard this morning, Your Honors, this has been a long...
And your name, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Beth Barbosa, B-A-R-B-O-S-A.
Thank you.
As the court has heard this morning and has acknowledged that this has been a long and litigated matters in this case before the court today. Going back to 2016 when the parties started the divorce process. As the court also knows from the pleadings and also from the briefs and the background of this case, the issue of whether or not this child has allergies and or has been sexually or physically abused by my client and or by her non-joint children or extended family has also been heavily litigated for several years. This case before you today came because of the fact that in October of 2021, the father, I will refer to appellant as father, filed an ex parte order for protection on behalf of the minor child and against my client and her non-joint child. That order was issued by Scott County, where my client is living at the time. The family court matter is in Hennepin County and has been since 2016. So in the fall of 2021, father filed this ex parte order for protection.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt, but we are familiar with the record.
Okay.
I think what I'd like to hear, at least from my part, would mm-hmm. be the issue of whether or not the district court erred in whether the district court's findings of fact here were clearly erroneous, leading to an abuse of discretion. Yep.
So, Your Honor, as I just wanted to kind of give that background of the fact that we started there and now we're before the court and the trial court in Hennepin County, because of the ex parte order was dismissed and my client filed an emergency ex parte order in the family court matter, and we had the evidentiary hearing on January 27th, 2022. The court found that my client met her burden of showing that there was endangerment on behalf of the minor child. And the appellant today has come before this court making the argument that the trial court erroneously made factual findings and the decision should be reversed. And I'd ask that the court today, this court has found that trial courts has a broad discretion in making determinations about parenting time. And this trial court had a long history of this case, had the benefit of all of the factual evidence and findings of fact, numerous orders that had been issued by his prior judicial officer that was assigned to this case. In reviewing those documents and all the evidence before it, the court did not make an erroneous decision. It was well supported throughout the order that was issued on April 14th of 2022 of this year. Very specific factual findings of why father was endangering the minor child. Now, father was trying to argue that these are the same behaviors that was continuing throughout the proceeding. However, as I argued on behalf of my client at trial, this is not the same. It is escalating behavior. It is the escalation of that behavior on behalf of the father and his parents that drove my client to ask the court for supervised parenting time for the father. And so the district court named several behaviors that escalated. One, it was the fact that father continues to have these beliefs about food allergies. And I think the court understands that the trial court had already made a decision regarding about whether or not this child has food allergies. But father's behavior and continued belief to make this child believe that he is allergic to gluten, allergic to dairy, that is harming the child emotionally. And that is why the court, is one of the reasons why the court suspended his parenting time to supervise parenting time, so that the mental injury would not continue, so that his father and his parents would not continue this narrative to the child without having a supervisor there. With a supervisor there, at least father can't make these claims and continue to talk to a minor child about these allergies that's not there.
Ms. Barbosa, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted you to respond to Mr. Vetter's argument that the door was open, and certainly there's the order has a number of references of findings as to the allergies or lack of allergies, and I think the phrase that Mr. Vetter used, his client's reasonable belief that he had these allergies, and that ties into the expert report. And since the supervise is based on that issue, what's your response to that the door was open such that the expert should have been able to testify about the reasonable beliefs that his client had regarding the allergies?
So I think the testimony by Ms. Davis was more or less in support of the fact that the father's belief is not reasonable, that the belief that continues to think that there's allergies is not happening. It's just one another data to show to the court that it's not happening. But also, you got to understand, too, Your Honors, that, and this is not, you know, Mr. Vedder did not say this, is that Ms. Davis was also the supervisor during the juvenile court proceeding. So she had a history of seeing this child. So she was also speaking to the fact that, hey, I've, you know, supervised this child previously, and I didn't see any allergies as well. So it's Ms. Davis came in. The question, you know, again, is a database, whereas, you know, as the record indicated, KinderCare, Prestige Academy, those were, you know, third-party caregivers that had not seen any, you know, allergies as well, symptoms of allergies. So Ms. Davis's testimony was more or less a, you know, supporting of saying, like, I've, you know, supervised this child before. I didn't see any, you know, allergies at that time. I, you know, I don't see any now. So I think it was a kind of a historical perspective, because in 2019, in the spring of 2019, when the juvenile matter was occurring, she was the supervisor for about 6 months at that time. And it was almost a weekly basis, or it was a weekly basis, the supervised parenting time. And if you look at the fact of Dr. Klein's report, I know that Mr. Vedder put that in as part of his brief. You know, I read it as such that, you know, Dr. Klein is like, hey, I'm just looking at it, and just I know this is a dispute between the parents, but maybe just to, like, resolve this dispute, even though the court resolved it, I'll just have another test done. Well, that's not saying that, hey, he's got a medical issue that, and therefore it should be looked at. It's really saying, and he says it in his report, there seems to be a dispute, and just to dissatisfy both parents, let's just have another test.
So can I just interrupt? Are you basically arguing that even if the full, you know, this testimony had been admitted and its full potential realized, it wouldn't have really added anything to the district court's determination?
Correct, Your Honor. It would not have added any, you know, relevance or any to the issue before the court, because, again, his sort of summary was, yeah, I've reviewed the, you know, medical records. Yeah, there seems to be a dispute, but, you know, and let's just solve that dispute by having another test. But, again, what I think Dr. Klein fails to understand is that we've already been down that road with the trial court. We've already said let's have, you know, additional testing. And the trial court found with the special master and at Mayo Clinic back in July of 2020, in the fall of 2020, with special master Manrique, that an oral food challenge test was supposed to happen, but it didn't happen. And there's specific findings in the trial court's decision of April 16th of 2021 that talks about why didn't it happen? Because father sabotaged it. Father did not allow it to go through. Father questioned the Mayo Clinic doctor. Mayo Clinic, he questioned with a 24-page document as to why the oral food challenge should not happen and why a blood test should happen. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at Dr. Klein's report, evaluation, he says a blood test and skin test, not much difference. They're pretty much the same. And that has been father's argument throughout the entire time, is that there needs to be a blood test taken. His own expert says there's not a difference between a skin test and a blood test. They're both accurate. And so now we've had skin tests done in this proceeding. We had One in 2016, there was another blood test in 2017. There was another skin test just recently in July of 2020. The Mayo Clinic doctor who actually saw and looked at and treated the minor child in this case looked at all the medical records. That was part of her direction. That was part of the special master's direction, that she was to look at all of the records. And as she did, again, those findings are in the April 16th, 2021 order by the trial court. Took those findings into consideration of the court of Dr. Montejo, saying that there are no allergies. All the tests that were done shows no allergies to gluten, dairy. Now, yes, there is an allergy, a recent one, to peanuts. And again, this court affirmed
counsel, just to be
the
clear
trial
that,
court.
I'm sorry, just to be clear in terms of what allergies are not have been diagnosed, there is an allergy to cats and dogs as well, correct?
I'm sorry?
There's an allergy to cats and dogs.
Oh, yes, and
well.
Cats and dogs. And thank you for bringing that up, Your Honor, because Mr. Vedder argued to the court that father wants mom to follow medically recommendations made by medical professionals. However, if the court looks at the record, father does not follow the recommendation by the Mayo Clinic doctor of saying, get rid of the dog. The dog is causing the minor child to have allergic reactions. He refuses to do that and won't heed to that medical advice. However, he is saying that mom is not following and accuses mom of not following other medical issues. So, Your Honor, the issue before the court is, did the trial court err in its decision to suspend his parenting time to supervise? It did not. And this court cannot stand in the place of the trial court to weigh and reweigh credibility determinations, reweigh the evidence. That is not what this court is supposed to do. The court is only to look at, did they clearly make an erroneous decision in light of all the evidence that was presented? And I ask the court to deny the father's request because it is clear that the trial court supported in its findings of fact why the supervised parenting time must take place and why father's parenting time should be reduced to supervised. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Couple of responses in terms of what was just said by Mother's attorney. First, this was Mother's burden of proof. Mother offered evidence on the present allergy issues. She just acknowledged that. There can't be any dispute about it because it's in the findings. Father has to be given the opportunity to rebut those issues through a medical professional. I know one of the questions that came up is, what, if any, benefit would Dr. Klein's report have had? And reading through his report, his ultimate conclusion was that, in my considered medical opinion, to a great degree of medical certainty, the child should have allergy testing as described above to solve the conundrum. The uncertainty of his status is a detrimental factor that could cause him considerable problems if allowed to continue. I note that this recommendation also appears consistent with recommendations from other medical professionals on the topic of this child.
But counsel, you're certainly right in terms of the burden of proof at the district court, but we're here at the Court of Appeals, and so our standard of review is we view the evidence in light most favorable to the district court's decision, including its findings of fact, and as long as the record supports it, we're only an error-correcting court. We have to affirm, as long as there's evidence in the record to support that. And I understand in your briefing and in your arguments here, you're pointing to other evidence that could be construed the other way, but that's not our standard of review. We just look at whether we look at the district court's findings and see whether the record actually supports that.
Yeah, except here, Your Honor, the district court excluded that evidence entirely.
Well, wouldn't you agree, though, that in terms of our standard review for those kinds of decisions, evidentiary decisions made by the lower court, the lower court has very wide discretion to determine what is going to be helpful expert testimony, what evidence is relevant and salient to the issues that are before me as the district court. Would you agree that the standard of review that we apply there is pretty tough for you as well?
I would acknowledge, Your Honor, that the district court has wide discretion. That's absolutely correct. It's not absolute discretion, meaning they can't just do anything. And if a party has a burden of proof, and they are allowed to prove it, the other party has the right to then seek to rebut it. I would add here in addition, this district court did an analysis of the best interest factors in 518.17. The second factor there was the special medical needs of the child. The court was looking at that presently, yet the court said, I'm not going to allow you, father, to present evidence on this issue.
But wasn't that because the district court had already, as Judge Sleater pointed out, specifically concluded in a prior proceeding that the belief of father was not reasonable, and the only issue before the district court here was whether the persistence of that belief and imposition of that belief on the child was endangering the child.
I think a two-part test, Your Honor. One, with respect to the endangerment, correct. But then there's a second piece to that, which is the best interest analysis, which this court also engaged in, which is different and distinct from that, and is consistent with the analysis they need to do. But when you go through all of those factors, frankly, the first two factors, the first factor also in 518.17 applies to a child's medical needs. The second one is the medical, special medical needs, and how parenting time ought to be addressed as part of that. And there the district court isn't doing an historical analysis, they're doing a current analysis, because that's what they have to do when they go through a best interest analysis in every case. So,
but the district court found that, yes, child has allergies to peanuts and to cats and dogs, and does not have allergies to gluten and milk. So how does the record, and the record seems to support those findings by the district court based on the prior determinations even of this court. So how is that erroneous? And I mean, like... stated, we don't reweigh evidence. We leave that to the district court to weigh all the testimony, including any experts, any testifying witnesses. It sounds like you want us to reweigh all the evidence again. That's not our job, though.
Yeah, and I'm not looking to that, Your Honor, but I do want to correct one thing. The district court did not find that the child has an allergy to peanuts. The district court found that the child has no allergies. That's the district court finding.
Well, I think that's an overcharacterization of what the district court said, because the district court made that statement in context of what father had been alleging in terms of what allergies child had.
I'm out of time. I have a response, but I am out of time.
You may respond briefly.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. The court did clarify that in a later finding. It did not clarify it in that finding. If you go back and look at the finding that I'm referencing, which is, I believe, finding 5, it said the child has no allergies. Later in the order, it did clarify that it was saying that there were no allergies consistent with father's opinion, but that was not what it found in that first one. It just found there were no allergies. I don't think there's any reference anywhere in that entire order to a peanut allergy, which, again, isn't disputed. It's known. It's wrong. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your briefs. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honor.